is the Israel Connection on JA Community Radio, broadcasting on 88 FM and streaming over the internet at j-air.com.au. My name is David Shulburn, bringing you another episode of this weekly radio program that provides analysis and insight with important interviews and discussion about Israel. Eurovision 2024 will be taking place in Malmo, Sweden in May. Israel had to change its entry for Eurovision because its original selection, October Rain, was deemed to be too political. Eden Galan will be singing Hurricane, and I'm speaking now with Israeli Eurovision expert Amir Alon about Israel's prospects at Eurovision 2024. I'm delighted to welcome you back, Amir Alon, to the Israel Connection.
Thank you very much, David.
Now, last time it was about 6 or so years ago, and you came into our little studio. You can't see what we have here now, but things have changed a little bit. You've been involved with Eurovision for quite some time as a representative for Israel at Eurovision. You've served as a spokesperson for the Israeli delegations in 2009, 2012, 2013, and 2016, as well as serving in similar positions for foreign delegations as well. You've also judged several Eurovision events. Now, what is your role these days, Amir? Do you want to tell us what you're up to these days as far as Eurovision is concerned?
Nowadays, I'm just commentating on several TV channels in Israel and in Europe and promoting my books, which are based and inspired by my many years of experience in the Eurovision. I think you have the first one, 3 Minutes of Eternity, and since then, the second one was released. It is what it is. So promoting them and, you know, working on different things.
Okay, well, we'll get to perhaps talk about your books in just a moment. Now, the grand final of Eurovision Song Contest, as I said, will take place in Sweden at the Malmo Arena on May the 11th. Now, last November, protesters chanted "Bomb Israel" and burned an Israeli flag in Malmo. There was no police protection seen at the only Jewish house of worship in Malmo, where extremist Muslims have been harassing Jews for years. Now, last September, there were riots in Malmo when an agitator burned a copy of the Quran. Would you foresee that there may be some problems in Malmo when it comes to Eurovision if Israel is still engaged in Gaza?
Some problems, there's going to be big, huge, mega problems. I was there in 2013 as part of the Israeli delegation. The Eurovision was held in Malmö. There were several very violent demonstrations against us. We were there with Israeli Secret Service people protecting us alongside about 30 police officers, Swedish police officers, surrounding us at all time. It wasn't really nice. It really, really wasn't nice being there. Unlike Stockholm, which was really nice in 2016. But Malmö, because of the population that is there, mainly Muslim people, very anti-Israeli, there is going to be massive problems, and my guess that if the Israeli delegation will stay in Malmö, they won't be able to leave the hotel.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it'll be too enjoyable for the Israeli contingent. Now, we spoke...
We're used to it.
Now, when I last interviewed you, you told us about the book you'd just written titled 3 Minutes of Eternity, which can be described as a pop reality book that unveils the seedy hijinks and backstage shenanigans at the Eurovision Song Contest through the eyes of an active participant, namely yourself. Now, please tell us about this book, and I wasn't aware of the subsequent book that you've written. What does that cover as far as Eurovision is concerned?
It's like the Harry Potter series. It's 3 Minutes of Eternity is the first one. It Is What It is the second one. Was released in Hebrew, will be released in English, I guess, next year. It's basically, both the books are about relationships between people, not necessarily romantic relationships, and how you choose to handle life when they bitch slap you in the face and, uncomfortable situations. And, I'm talking about Israeli delegations that are taking part in the Eurovision and what it's all about. In 3 minutes of eternity, we're dealing with Iranian terrorists, which did happen to us back in 2012 in Baku, Azerbaijan. In the new book, it's BDS and other things. I won't reveal everything, but I can say that both the books are really fun and really nice, very enjoyable.
So I guess the newer book is a little bit more political than the 3 minutes of eternity. 3 minutes of eternity is a
Yes,
bit
indeed,
yes.
more political. Yes.
So you were slated to be a judge before the Estonian pre-Eurovision contest, a position you've held multiple times, but the offer was rescinded due to you being an Israeli citizen. Now, this is yet another case of ordinary Israelis like yourself feeling the brunt of reactions to Israel's war in Gaza. How do you feel about what happened to you?
Yeah, well, let's say that I've been serving as an international jury in many national finals across Europe, in Estonia, in Sweden and Norway, Finland, Ireland, Bulgaria, Malta. And this year, the production team of the Estonian Eurovision final or pre-Eurovision, they were kind enough to invite me because they're aware of my knowledge and they wanted my help. The executives at the Estonian television refused or actually canceled my invitation to Estonia because they said, and they weren't wrong actually, that bringing an Israeli person to Estonia and having him or me on air could cause a lot of backlash and really nasty comments. And they wanted to avoid that. Now, I didn't like that, but I do understand it because having me there would obviously ha they would have to let's say spare a lot of time explaining things and communicating with the Eurovision fans and people who are against Israel. And why should they? If they can avoid that, why do that? So, I was sad for me and disappointed, but I do understand their act.
But wouldn't the same kind of thing be likely to happen at the main event? That's going ahead in the case of this smaller event. Isn't that a
I've
kind of
been
a
talking about
dress?
it for. Yeah, David, I've been talking about it for the past month. In the semifinals, 100% of the votes are coming from the televotes. And I don't see any problem with the televotes. People will vote for Israel. We've got a good song. My main issue is with the final. 50% of the votes are coming from international juries. And I guess. And I'm afraid that a lot of them will not be voting for Israel because they'll be afraid to be subject of harassment by a lot of people, anti-Israelis. And they will try to avoid it. So my fear is not the votes, the televotes, the popular votes, but the international juries, which may not give a lot of points to Israel, if any.
Well, giving a lot of points or not giving a lot of points is one thing, but political actions. We have seen events in the past where some performers have unveiled Palestinian flags and all that type of thing, even though that's against the rules. But who's to know what could and might happen?
Listen, David, most likely the singer Eden Golan will be booed when she's on stage. We're aware of that. We know everything. People may try to jump on stage while her performance. I guess security there and Israeli security are taking everything under a measure and consider everything and every scenario. I trust them 100%.
I hope you trust them more than the people in Sderot after what happened on October the 7th. That was
I still
terrible.
have confidence with the Israeli security
Yes, I
services.
think they're on the ball at the moment, on full alert. Actually, one wonders if you were an Israeli Arab and were invited to Estonia, would you think that they would have also told you that you weren't welcome?
I don't know how to answer hypothetical questions, so I will not.
Okay, yeah, so let the audience imagine what might be a possible answer to that question. We'll just toss that one out for them. Now, what do you think? I'm going to ask you now, what do you think about Israel's original selection of the song October Rain for Eurovision? But before you answer, just indulge me for a moment, please, Amir, and let me just play a short part of the song that has actually been released, so people can just have a quick listen. So take a breather for a minute, and I'll be back after this song.
Sure.
Stand with me, look into my eyes and see. People go away but never say goodbye. Someone stole the moon tonight, took my light. Everything is black and white. Who's the fool who told you boys don't cry? Hours and hours and flowers. Life is no game for the cowards. Why does time go wild? Every day I'm losing my mind, holding on in this mysterious ride. Dancing in the storm, we got nothing to hide. Take me home and leave the world behind. And I promise you that never again. I'm so wet from this October.
So we just played part of October Rain, which was the original Israeli candidate for Eurovision. What did you think about Israel's original selection?
I think all the problems started when the Israeli broadcaster Kan declared or said in advance that the Israeli entry would be about the October 7th events, which obviously stated to the EBU, the European Broadcasting Union, that the song would be political, let's say it like that. Or potentially political. And how they acted, Khan, was disgraceful, in my opinion. Because in the text, the original text, October Rain, I didn't see any problem with it. Friends of mine who were former head of delegations for other countries said to me, it doesn't breach the Eurovision rules. So we don't really understand why the original text was rejected. However, I think, in my opinion, knowing the EBU, they were a bit overprotective of the brand that is Eurovision, and this is why they have asked Israel to change the lyrics. The new lyrics are just as political, if you want to see it like that, as October Rain. The new song is Hurricane, called Hurricane. But it's all, all the problems and everything, it was just because of how the Israeli broadcaster decided to act and react, and it was just horrible and, very not professional, in my opinion.
Well, they certainly managed to put together another entry for Eurovision very, very quickly. Do you know anything about how that was managed?
And I said very quickly, we had about a week, Israel had a week to submit the new text and submit the new entry and everything, the video clip. And if you'll watch the video clip of Hurricane, the Israeli entry for the Eurovision, you'll see a lot of references to October 7th and the Nova Party. So it's again, it could be seen as a very political song. And we have sang so many political songs in the past, but they were not, they didn't breach the rules of the Eurovision. And again, with October Rain, I think the EBU was a bit overprotective and was trying to please a lot of anti-Israeli people in Europe, as if they did something, as if they are being a bit harsh on Israel. And, you know, everyone's happy.
So we end up with another song, as you say, which is virtually as political as the first, but yet it doesn't get canned. It's a bit surprising. They played the political game, and that's been the end of it.
Yeah.
Hmm. So we've had October Rain. Now we've got Hurricane, as you say. What do you make of Israel's replacement entry, Hurricane, sung by Eden Golan?
I think it's a really, really, really nice song. People in Israel absolutely adore it. She's a great singer. She's a great performer. I think, in my opinion, and, you know, I've been working with Eurovision for over or more than 30 years. This year, it's a bit too circusy. I can't defend Eurovision anymore because most of the songs are just horrible. And this stands out because it's a real song. It's one of the few ballads that are participating this year. I think we have a chance of doing well, going to the final, qualifying to the final and doing quite well in the contest this year.
Because Israel can get
despite
to the
final. Everything.
Israel gets to the final without relying on the public, which is infused with anti-Israel feeling. It's just up to...
Actually relying on the public. I mean, in Eurovision, you vote for the songs that you like, not for the song it's not a reality show. So a lot of people will vote for Israel, Jewish communities, Israelis, people who will like the Israeli entry and will put politics aside. So I'm not really concerned about that. I think we should qualify. It's a good song. I think we will get the public votes.
But you said the public only comes into the picture in the final, doesn't it?
No. I said in the semi-final, the public is 100% of the votes.
All right.
In the semi-final. And in the final, it's 50% the televotes and 50% Israel international juries. Which my fear is the international juries in the final. With the public votes, I'm not concerned.
Okay. So you also intimated that the countries that Israel is competing with have not submitted songs that are much chop. Are there any good contenders amongst the other nations?
I adore the Italian entry. Italy, as usual, sends a fantastic song. Really great. I hope they'll win it. In Israel, we will be cheering for Luxembourg having an Israeli singer representing them. So obviously, we support our own. And she's a lovely, lovely young woman. I met her in the national final in Luxembourg. I was there with a Eurovision winner that I'm working with, a Luxembourgian former Eurovision winner from Luxembourg, Anne-Marie David. She's not Jewish. Even though the name, so I met the Israeli singer who will be representing Luxembourg, and obviously we will be supporting her, and you know, but the Italian entry is the best.
All right, so if people want to do some betting, we've got a good tip here from Amir. The woman from Luxembourg, is she made She left Israel to go and live in Luxembourg. Is that
the case? Yeah, she was born in Israel, and at the age of 8 or 7, her parents moved to Luxembourg. So she's been living there for the past 12 or 13 years. Her older brother is serving at the Israeli army right now. So my guess is that Israel will back her up and stand behind her and will give her the 12 points, as we should, because we support our own.
Yes, as you said. Now, one thing is very evident in my mind, and I think in yours as well, is that Eden Golan has a very powerful voice and indeed deserves to be representing Israel at Eurovision. How was she selected by Israel? What was the process that got Israel to choose her?
In recent years, we have a TV show called HaKochav Haba, The Next Star, for Eurovision. And it's kind of a reality show, same as, I don't know, with the X Factor or The Voice. And the singer is being picked through that method. So, you know, she was, she went like Netta Barzilai, who won for Israel in 2018. You know, they're going through this TV show and representing Israel.
Yeah. When we were speaking a moment about other contenders, have you heard about the Australian entry, by the way? Because oddly enough, Australia is a competitor at Eurovision, many people say.
Not oddly enough, you know, I know that Eurovision has been a huge hit in Australia since the 80s. So it's not strange at all, and I really like it, and I really like actually the people who are doing Eurovision for Australia, the people responsible for Eurovision. They're good friends of mine, and you know, I really love them. I haven't heard the Australian entry this year, I have to admit. I think it's one of the few entries I haven't had the chance of listening to, but I'm really looking forward to hearing that, because usually the Australian entries are quite nice, especially 2015, 16, 17, you know, really great songs. Yeah, let's see how you'll do in Eurovision this year.
Yeah, we came in the top three. I don't remember which year it was, but we were.
2016, I think you came second. Yes. With a great song, The Sound of... Sound of Silence, a brilliant song.
Will you be going to Malmö yourself? Do you go for the event?
Oh, God, no. Oh, God, no. God, I've been there twice. That was more than enough. I think it's disgraceful that the Swedes chose to hold the Eurovision in Malmö. Atrocity that the EBU approved it. Malmö is not a safe city. The BBC had said about it that it's the rape capital of Europe. It's not safe. I think even LGBTQ people cannot walk the streets without being harassed. I think it's disgraceful that it's being held there. Could have been held in Stockholm or Gothenburg. Malmö is a big, big, big problem as a city. And I really don't want to go there, and therefore I will not.
Well, I suppose in the past you have gone to the events. That's been your custom, has it?
I've been there twice. Yeah, I've been there for the Eurovision. Yeah, and another time for a friend of mine have had an event for in his honor. So I went there. But you know, it's a nice city, but the population is the problem.
Well, thank you very much for coming on to the Israel Connection early in the morning from Israel. Amir, it's been really a pleasure to talk to you, and I think that our audience appreciates hearing from somebody who knows a lot about Eurovision. And I'm going to play Hurricane after we finish talking, so people can make their own judgment as to whether Israel will be well represented. Thank you very much for talking to me today on
Brilliant.
The program. Great, great pleasure. Thank you.
Symphony, play with me, look into my eyes and see
People walk away but never say goodbye. Someone stole the moon tonight, took my light. Everything is black and white. Who's the fool who told you boys don't cry? Hours and hours and powers. Life is no game, but it's ours while the time goes wild. Every day I'm losing my mind, holding on in this mysterious ride, dancing in the storm. I got nothing to hide. Take it. Living in a fantasy, ecstasy. Everything is meant to be. We shall pass, but love will never die. Hours and hours and powers. Life is no game, but it's ours. Why? The time goes wild. Every day I'm losing my mind, holding on in this mysterious ride, dancing in the storm. I got nothing to hide. Take it all and leave the world behind. Baby, promise me you'll hold me again. I'm still broken from this hurricane. This hurricane. מילים גדולות, רק תפילות, אפילו אם קשה לראות, תמיד אתה משאיר לי אור אחד קטן.
So we've just been listening to Aidan Golan singing Hurricane, Israel's entry in Eurovision. My next guest is Dr. Laura Wharton, originally from the US, who received a BA from Harvard University before immigrating to Israel. She served in the IDF, was a member of Kibbutz Kfar Blum, and completed a doctorate at the Hebrew University, where she now teaches. Laura is and has been very politically active, was on the Meretz party list for the Knesset, and today is a member of Jerusalem City Council. Welcome, Laura, to the Israel Connection.
Good morning.
Good morning. I hope you survived the hurricane that we just saw passing by.
Yes.
Before I get to my interview with you, I'm going to play a short audio clip from an event that was organized last week by pro-Palestinian supporters, their guest being Nathan Thrall, who was given exposure a few weeks ago on what is our infamous ABC TV program Q&A. Let's just listen to this to start off.
This isn't a controversial view. If you listen to any Israeli, even military commentator, not any, but many respected ones, they will tell you, of course, it's an absurd goal. There is no elimination of Hamas, and I'm not just talking about the sense that, of course, it exists as an idea and as a party, and it will continue to exist in the West Bank, and it will continue to exist in the diaspora. No, it will continue to exist in Gaza. It was the strongest party in Gaza prior to October 7th. If you look at the areas of the north that Israel claims that it has conquered and mission accomplished in the north, as soon as there was any chance to try and help people get what little aid or food was there, who was doing it? It was the members of the former Hamas government who were coming out and trying to help people there. So they're still there, even in the area that's been supposedly cleared. And that will be true no matter what happens now, whether they do an operation in Rafah or they don't do an operation in Rafah. The only difference between a ceasefire now and a ceasefire weeks or months from now is that in both cases, Hamas will still be there. And in one case, you have thousands more Palestinian civilians who will have been killed.
So you just heard some remarks from Nathan Thrall that were made at a pro-Palestinian event in Melbourne recently, just one of a couple that I'm aware of. And I could play much more of what he said, which is derogatory about Israel. As a Jew living in Jerusalem, like Nathan Thrall, what would you say about him, a Jew who has received some acclaim for a book he wrote last year, A Day in the Life of Abed Salama, and who was constantly feted by pro-Palestinian groups?
Well, first of all, I'd say some of what he's saying I agree with. I think the prime minister's attempt and other government ministers and Israeli officials' attempt to present the elimination of Hamas as a goal are just, you know, very populistic and not addressing the problem, which is the military capabilities of the Hamas, which we clearly have to destroy. I would say, though, that trying to present a black and white picture is always very dangerous, and particularly in this case. So as in the same way that I would say, and I know that not all Gazans want to kill all Israelis, I certainly don't blame Israel for everything that's going on and all the deaths of Gazans in Israel. We did not start this war. We are not looking to kill people or we as a state as a goal. So I would say that I agree with him that there's a lot of populist talk that's much of which is based on a will for vengeance. But I would also say I'm a proud Zionist, and I think that any country in the world would have responded similarly in the beginning, and that the real question we have now is how can we guarantee that Hamas is left with no military capabilities or as little as possible without causing needless human suffering on the side of the Gazans.
So the person I've been talking about is Nathan Thrall. Do you happen to know him at all in any sense?
Actually, I don't know him at all, and I must confess as well that I haven't read his book. But I have heard what he said, and I do think it's troubling that people are going overboard in their criticisms of Israel. I'm certainly concerned by the rise of anti-Semitism. I think the most basic responsibility of any state, and I have been teaching political science for some years, is to protect citizens. Israel failed on the 7th of October, and we have to actively see to a better, safer future for our citizens. However, as I said, I think there is genuine concern in Israel and must be for innocent Gazan lives, and I don't think it serves us to try to put out the other half and say, well, if all of Gazans want to kill us, which is not true, then we have to kill all the Gazans or we have to eliminate the Hamas. I'd also like to point out that Hamas is not the strongest party. It's the only party in Gaza, because after the elections in 2006, beginning in 2007, Hamas eliminated as best it could the PLO in Gaza. Half of the population of Gaza wasn't even born when the last elections took place. So to say they voted for or supported the Hamas is really a distortion. We don't know what most Gazan thinks, but I would expect that most of them want to live. And I'd add another point that I think is important to realize. By coincidence, in July of 2023, the Washington Near East Institute did a poll in Gaza, and there 62% of Gazans supported a ceasefire with Israel, and half said they foresee or would aspire to living side by side with Israel. Certainly attitudes there have changed, as have attitudes in Israel. But I would just go back to the point. and focus on the fact that I do agree with Nathan Thrall, though I've never met him, from what he said, can say in that Israel has to be concerned with Gazan lives. On the other hand, I don't think one can hold Israel to blame for responding as any state would to the massacre of 1,400 of its citizens.
Yeah, the thing that Nathan Thrall, though, says is that the elimination of Hamas is not possible, so that only thing that Israel achieved by continuing the war is killing more civilians. But that is not the case. I mean, Israel killed in the Al-Shifa hospital some 50 Gazans, and they would have, I think, all ostensibly been Hamas, including one of their top commanders. So we constantly hear in our media here the number of Palestinians or Gazans that have been killed, but there's never any identification amongst the casualties of how many amongst them were from Hamas.
Well, I think, though, that's hard to know. And I think that even if we killed in a given day 10 or 50 or even 100 Hamas supporters or Hamas militants, the question is how much of what is called politically correct military speech collateral damage there is. I'm certainly against, as I mentioned, eliminating all military capabilities of the Hamas and eliminating as much of the Hamas military leadership as possible. But I think to set as a goal eliminating Hamas completely is not reasonable. It's not possible, especially since we know that there is support of Hamas as the ruler of Gaza, just as people in any other country identify with their government, horrible as it may be. And while I do certainly condemn Hamas as a movement that sets as a goal to eliminate Israel, I do think that that is obviously absolutely unacceptable. I don't think it's possible to eliminate all Hamas supporters in Gaza, and I don't see that as a goal.
Well, even to eliminate Hamas in Gaza, you've still got the problem of the West Bank, Judea and Samaria, where there's a very strong support for Hamas existing there. But let's shift the focus more to you. Laura, a bit about you. You chose the title for the publicity of our interview today to be an Anglo-immigrant in Jerusalem City Council. Why did you choose to highlight that description of yourself in particular?
Well, because I think as an immigrant from the U.S., as it happens, I do see things sometimes a little bit differently than people who have been born and grown up here. And that sadly, I think a lot of Israelis are not familiar enough with the original goals and the context of the foundation of the State of Israel. And for me, that is a very important dream, and it's very important to realize it. I think that a lot of Israelis, especially in the last several years, are overrun with talks of Jews in a Jewish state in a very narrow and, I think, warped understanding of what a Jewish state is. Herzl's book was called The State of the Jews, Not a Jewish State. And I think that's a much more accurate picture of what should be here and what I'd aspire to have here. The state should not be a religious one. I don't want to have Iran in a Jewish version here. I want to have a state that is the homeland for the Jewish people. And obviously, being Jewish and being part of the Jewish nation includes a lot of Jewish tradition, and values the religious traditions as well. But I don't want it to be, a big Jewish ghetto. I want it to have a state. And therefore, I see as equally important goals, talking about justice in various forms, about social justice. I think Israel has to be an inclusive state. That is, it has to be fair and treat all of its citizens equally, be they Jewish or not. I think Jews everywhere should know that Israel is their home and that we should keep an active connection with Jews all over the world. And I also was brought up on principles of transparency in government that has kind of been put aside in the Israeli state lately. So there are a lot of principles. I said, first of all, the idea of Israel being a Jewish homeland that I think Israelis either take for granted or don't understand has a much wider meaning than being a state in where religious law is going to govern. And I think there are issues of transparency, clean government, good government, inclusive government that we can learn from places around the world, other Western democracies. I'd also mention I worked a lot on accessibility for people with disabilities. That was something that was not very much talked about 10 years ago. Fortunately, it is today. And there are ideas out there that I think Israel should adopt and try to implement in the state. And I think that the inflow of immigrants from Australia, from the US, or wherever they come, is very healthy for the state.
Now, when you talk about transparency and inclusivity from other Western mm-hmm. nations that Israel should learn, I don't know whether you can mention the US in those same terms these days with what's looming yeah. there, but we're not going to go into American politics. Not at the moment.
It's too grim. It's too grim.
Yes, it certainly is. Now, the 2024 Jerusalem municipal election was held on the 27th of February of this year to elect the mayor of Jerusalem and the members of the city council, and you were re-elected. The election was part of the 2024 Israeli municipal elections. These were originally scheduled for October the 31st last year. The elections were delayed due to the Israel-Hamas war until the 30th of January this year, and then they were further delayed until the 27th of February because of the large number of candidates who are serving as reservists. So how did the elections turn out in the end?
Well, apart from the fact that they turned out, it turned out well for my party and me. we managed to double our representation on the city council. I would say there were two big messages that came out of it. One is that it was a very sad election in that the voter turnout was very low for Israel and for Jerusalem. It was more than 10% percentage points lower than the last elections or than the average elections in Israel. And that was because people are, you know, very concerned about the situation, not eager to go out and do anything really. We're really in a post-trauma situation still from the 7th of October. So there was low voter turnout. And not only was that because of the general national sentiments, it was also because of the fact that we're still in a war. There are a lot of people, even candidates from our list, among our top 10 on our list, there were two that were actually in active duty for most of the last few months. One of number five on our list was turned in his equipment and came to Jerusalem the day before the elections. Apart from which, the person who ran our campaign, more than half the people running our campaign were called up and were serving as reservists for the months before the election. And also, as I mentioned, the voters, many were not in a mood to go out and vote. They're very concerned about their loved ones, everyone, including myself, as friends, colleagues in the war. My children were called up and served. So there's a very grim atmosphere. I also mentioned that my party spearheaded the demand that was the court recognized, or the government it acceded to, which was to postpone the elections because they were, after the original October date, they were rescheduled for January, and we got it put off because we said, you know, you can't hold an election when there are so many people fighting, there's so many reservists serving. And also, I can't not mention what is probably the most pressing issue on the Israeli agenda today, which is the return of the hostages. A lot of people, myself included, are very involved in the campaign to get them back as soon as possible. So when people are demonstrating to, you know, save the lives of the 134 hostages, it's hard to get them to come out and also hand out leaflets. So that was one issue. I'd also mention that my party, which is a party of secular and religious or liberal groups in the city, was the one that had the largest percentage of its voters and supporters not here. The secular public in Israel is the only public where all men and women are drafted. So that made things difficult. But the other issue that I think was very strongly felt is that because of the situation, because of the hostages, because we're still at war, there were a lot of people turning and asking for unity and talking about coming together and being supportive of one another and putting as many of the differences possible aside. My party was a union of several parties that came together on that ticket, among others. And I think that will also be reflected in the national elections, the next ones, whenever they are, and most people expect will be this year. So there's a combination, as I said, of a very grim national spirit on the one hand, on the other hand, a real aspiration to bring people together and to not attack one another as parties normally do in elections, and to be respectful as possible of our competitors.
So, what is the name of the party that you belong to?
It's called the Jerusalem Union, and it was formed by four different parties that came together. My party, Meretz, which is no longer in the Knesset, the Labor Party, Yesh Atid, Yair Lapid's party, and a party that's called a National Covenant, which is a group that was formed out of the demonstrations against the attempts to change the judiciary system.
So you just mentioned about your connection with Meretz. You're an active member of Meretz. You're on the ticket for the last elections, and as we know, Meretz failed at the last Israeli elections to win any seats in the Knesset. What is Meretz doing now to reassert itself?
Well, in continuation of the, what I described as the national spirit about, which is both on the one hand great concern and on the other hand a real desire to reassemble the left cause some changes in Israeli politics. We're working now to form a union with the Labor Party on a national level. As I said, we did it in Jerusalem, but we're trying to do that nationally and also to bring in other parts of the public that maybe didn't vote either of those parties previously, but is concerned with preserving liberal values in Israel. Equality, respect for all citizens, respect for various freedoms, including freedom of religion. So we're trying to rethink things that we want to emphasize. And we want to present a liberal patriotic front that is concerned with the future of Israel, but not just in terms of its existence, which I believe is guaranteed, but the existence of the values upon which it was founded, which includes, as I said, equality, respect for others, clean government, I think also social justice. One group that I haven't mentioned that did not vote at all in the last elections, the municipal elections, were residents of the North and South. More than 200,000 residents of the North and South were evacuated because of the war, and their elections were postponed since they're not at home. They still haven't found a place, and there's a lot of criticism, and I take part in the criticizing of the way the government has handled these people. They live on, what could be called the geographic periphery of Israel, but they should get all the services that one gets in the center and in the large cities, certainly in the capital of the city. So I hope that the left, in reforming itself and redefining itself, it'll take into account these things that we talked about always in the past, but they've become more pressing, since the war began, because you see how people from the north are being treated or not, as compared to, what's happening in the major cities where most of the members of Knesset come from.
Yes, it's quite extraordinary set of events that have happened to Israel that the Labour Party was so dominant in its Israel's foundation, and today it barely exists. Well, and I can understand that it was deemed to be a good move to combine with the Labour Party, even though that wasn't considered the way to go with the previous leader of Meretz, was it? She tried to run Meretz independently, but that didn't work.
Well, actually, it didn't work because the Labour Party didn't want to join with us.
Okay.
We wanted to. We sought a joint run, and they didn't want it. And in retrospect, one can see it was a mistake for them, not only because of the results, but because now in all the polls, Meretz gets a much higher percentage than the Labour Party, because people respected our efforts to form a wider bloc and look beyond our own voters, whereas the Labour Party is, it seems, is being punished by its voters and will be if it continues to insist on running independently.
So in your role in the City Council, with the services, especially for East Jerusalem, which is a more deprived part of the city, which has a population of over 600,000, even more than half of the total population of Jerusalem now, which is over 1 million, there are 60% or more Arab Palestinians in East Jerusalem. The entire Jerusalem apparently has 40% Arab population. What are the issues that are of particular concern with East Jerusalem and bringing these people into the game?
Okay, well, first I just want to clarify. The whole population of Jerusalem is now 1 million, almost 40% are yes. Palestinian, which I say not only because of how they self-identify, but because they don't have Israeli citizenship. So it's a very strange to put it mildly, situation where almost 40% of the residents of the nation's capital are not citizens of the state. And it makes the, things very difficult for them in a lot of ways, amongst others, since they're not citizens, they can't vote for the Knesset, for the parliament. They can vote in local elections, but they choose not to. They traditionally boycott the elections, as they did this time as well. In terms of the issues, the most pressing issue for a lot of them is the issue of building and planning, because most of large parts, still I think a majority of the land in East Jerusalem is not planned, that is not recognized for purposes of getting building permits. And there are more than 30,000 housing units that are considered illegal by Israel because they didn't go through a process of getting a permit, which is not possible for them. So Israel, sadly, has an ongoing policy of raising, that is destroying, demolishing buildings in East Jerusalem, a little over 100 a year, and possibility to do more because the planning has not been settled even after 57 years. So that is of great concern. We have made some progress in the last couple of years, and I'm very interested in continuing to advance the planning for East Jerusalem so people will know where the roads are, where the schools are going to be built, and can build houses accordingly and can know that their houses will not be demolished. So that is a big concern. But a similar situation exists in almost all the fields of infrastructure in East Jerusalem. Still, more than half of East Jerusalem doesn't have a proper sewage system. They don't have, many of the neighborhoods don't have proper roads or very bad roads. There's a lack of school classrooms. And although Jerusalem has now adopted a very ambitious plan for filling in and building more classrooms, there's still a great lack. Because the lack of classrooms and the bad conditions in most of the schools, not all, but most of the schools, there's a very high dropout rate of students. So you have a situation where children are not going to school, so they're out in the streets. And as happens wherever children are out in the streets, there's a lot of friction with the law enforcement. And the police are in conflict with Palestinians, including Palestinian children, almost every day in one way or another, which certainly is not what I think the police should be doing, and certainly not where I'd like to have Palestinian children. And going on from there, I think the problems exist in, as I said, almost every field in terms of services, health services, whatever. So that's about that's the situation. I think the gaps are narrowing, but I hope we can do more to narrow more of the gaps faster and more completely.
Just a quick question: do the people living in East Jerusalem, the Arab population, pay ample taxes?
Yes, they pay taxes, and ironically, contrary to what some people suspect, in many of the neighborhoods, they pay their taxes at a higher rate than in West Jerusalem, because they're required to show that they've paid their taxes in order to renew their permanent residency status. As I mentioned, they're not citizens. They're permanent residents, so they're called upon every year, every 3 years, depends, to prove that they're actually living in Jerusalem, and therefore they do pay their taxes.
Now, despite the war, the city of Jerusalem is planning its first Purim parade in 42 years. Now, this seems quite an extraordinary event, and it's a positive note, I suppose, to finish off our conversation. Do you want to tell us about what is being planned for Purim in Jerusalem in a few days' time?
Well, yes. What is being planned is a parade. It's called the Aluyada, which is a parade, a kind of parade that is held in some cities in Israel, though I think most have canceled for this year. And basically what we have is a kind of tension that exists all over Israel now, which is, on the one hand, a drive, a yearning to return to normalcy and to routine. And on the other hand, a concern and a desire to continue to recognize that we're in a state of war, that there are hostages being held and everything else, and not to return to normalcy. And the question is how each person and each part of the government navigates that. So, I mean, I don't think anyone wants to cancel Purim this year, because people, especially children, I must say, look forward to Purim all year. On the other hand, we don't want to celebrate and ignore the fact that we have soldiers fighting and falling. I mean, we're still continuing to lose soldiers every day. So what the Jerusalem municipality is planning, is to have a parade of some sort, but also to have it toned down, have only local things, and not have, you know, wild dancing in the streets as one might want to have on Purim. And there's a lot of criticism on both sides. As I said, there are people who very much want to have celebrations so that people can, you know, come out of their depression. And on the other hand, people want to be respectful of the hostages, those people fighting, and all the families of fallen soldiers.
Well, it's been a real pleasure talking to you, Laura. We've run out of time, as often happens. And I thank you very much for speaking with me today on the Israel Connection.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Until next week, it's goodbye from the Israel Connection.
רק את נשארת במקום, אין לאן ללכת, נהיה קצת קר, נהיה קצת מאוחר בשביל לחלום.